Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Ed Chu and Ken Miller. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Chu is Deputy Director and Chief of Medical Oncology at Yale Cancer Center, and Dr. Miller is a medical oncologist specializing in pain and palliative care, and he serves as the Director of the Connecticut Challenge Survivorship Clinic. If you'd like to join the discussion, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, we look at kidney cancer as Ken Miller welcomes Drs. Harriet Kluger and Edward Uccio. Dr. Kluger is an assistant professor of oncology at Yale Cancer Center, and Dr. Uccio is the chief of the urology service and director of urologic oncology at the VA Connecticut Healthcare System.
Harriet, Ed, let's start out talking about kidney cancer and what's causing it, why is the incidence seem to be increasing?
Well, we were actually just discussing this before you came, and the issue is before patients would come with symptomatic disease, and over half of them would come with metastatic disease. And now with the advent of the CAT scan and ultrasound, we're picking up a lot of asymptomatic tumors. And now if you look at the data, over half of these tumors are presenting asymptomatically. And they come in for some other reason, maybe some GI upset or whatnot, and majority of these patients are getting scanned in the emergency room. So we're seeing much smaller tumors now. And that's the incidence has jumped significantly in the past few years.
So are there patients where the cancer is being diagnosed to just because of a CAT scan where perhaps it never would have become evident?
Absolutely. And, I think that the problem is we're treating it like how we used to treat it when they would come in with significant sizes. I mean, we would do surgery for these and have no problem. Now we are seeing small tumors in the 1 centimeter range. And even beyond the definition of the CAT scan itself, we know that there's a lesion there, and now we have to follow them with CAT scans. And so there's a significant population, especially in our clinics, that we're following and we're not doing anything for them.
Now, is your sense that so we're finding more, but is actually the incidence of it increasing? Is there something in the environment, or is it cell phones? What do you think?
Well, the incidence of death is also increasing a little bit. So because of that, one can then assume that perhaps the true incidence is also increasing, not just the incidence of a diagnosis. But it's not increasing as rapidly and as dramatically as the actual incidence in diagnosis. We were just talking before that in the reports from 2006, they mentioned 35,000 cases in the United States a year, and 2007 went up to just over 50, and 2008 the projected incidence is already 54,000. So that's a dramatic increase in incidence.
It really is.
Whether or not it's true new cases or just earlier detection of things that in the past would have been missed, we don't really know, but we assume that it's more of detection of things that would have been missed in the past.
Now, by the way, a terminology question. Is there a difference between kidney cancer and renal cell carcinoma?
Kidney cancer essentially means cancer that arises in the kidney. A whole batch of different types of cells in the kidney, and one of them is a renal cell or renal tubular cell. And without getting into too much technical details, renal cell carcinoma is the majority of the kidney cancers, but not all of them. There are other kinds as well. You can have lymphoma of the kidney, you can have renal pelvis cancer, and so on.
If you look at the lay literature, everyone just uses kidney cancer, and they're basically talking about renal cell carcinoma because that's about 95% of the cancers. And I don't want to give that impression that although we're seeing more of these cancers, and I said that we may not be treating all of them, it's not that they don't need to be treated. We're seeing them in a lot of different age groups. And some of the age groups, their life expectancy is very short, and they have significant comorbidities, and subsequently observation does become a treatment option or a decision option.
So, for example, if you find a kidney cancer in a person, in their 80s or late 80s, might you adopt that kind of watchful waiting approach?
Absolutely. We actually bring it up because there's some data, especially from the Toronto group, who's followed a significant portion of patients who have significant comorbidities that make us not want to treat them. Now, we bring it up, but when you start to bring in new modalities of treatment, then we have a different way of treating patients that is not surgery. They don't go under anesthesia. And so is that arm really important? We bring it up because some people just don't want anything done, first of all. But, you know, now we can treat things so minimally invasively. I usually give everyone an option for treatment.
Who develops kidney cancer? Is it more men than women? Is it certain ages, certain parts of the country?
More men than women, more common in African Americans, more common in people with a few of the other risk factors, which include smoking, the main risk factor, obesity, and certain hereditary conditions.
If a patient, let's say has a CAT scan for other reasons, and I want to get into some of the issues of how you make the diagnosis, and you find a small little mass in the kidney, well, let's say 1 centimeter, half an inch, well, what happens, and how do you decide if it actually is a cancer, and then embark on a treatment plan?
Yeah, our real main issue is this lesion in the kidney, is it solid or not? Because a lot of patients have cystic lesions, which require no follow-up. The way we find if they're solid and actually potentially can be a cancer is we do a CAT scan and we give IV contrast. But these days, even people coming to the emergency room are getting contrast, so we can usually tell even by the referral with the CAT scan that if this is likely a malignancy.
How do you take it from there in terms of biopsies or?
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting question because most cancers, the mainstay is doing a needle biopsy and finding out what it is before you do it. Kidney cancer is a little different here. There's a sampling error when we biopsy in which you can get normal tissue and maybe you didn't actually hit the lesion, and you definitely wouldn't want to watch a lesion like that. So the basic standard of care is to excise the lesion or to take the whole kidney out, and to under pathologic examination of the whole kidney or whole lesion, we decide if this is malignant or not. And the majority are malignant. But as we start to find much smaller tumors like we discussed earlier, the malignancy rate actually is decreasing, but still it's around the 80% range.
You began to talk a little bit about more minimally invasive ways of treating cancer, which I have to say is very exciting and as compared to the idea of taking an entire kidney out. So tell us more about it, if you would.
Yeah, I think the two main groups is either surgery or ablation for treatment. Now, surgery can be done just standard surgery where we make incision or a cut on the abdomen or side of the body, or we can do it laparoscopically, and that's also called minimally invasive therapy. Now, if you want to look at the most minimally invasive therapy, we're talking about ablation therapies. We don't do those through incisions. At the most invasively we would do it is through a laparoscopic port, through little holes in the abdomen, or what I specialize in is actually percutaneous treatment. And the majority of treatments I do now are percutaneous, where I actually just put the needle straight through the body, through the skin. And this is a 17-gauge needle. You can imagine that's very, very small. Mm-hmm. And we can do that with minimal local sedation, and I do it under the CAT scanner, and they can go home the same day, and they go home with just a Band-Aid on the side of their body.
So you put a needle right into the tumor, and then what?
Exactly. So there's two ways to do it. Once you got that needle in there, you could either kill the tumor by heating it up, which is called radiofrequency ablation, or you can freeze it, or cryotherapy. And I do both of them, but cryotherapy does have the advantages. You can see the ice ball in the freezing zone much more accurately. And so that's my modality of choice.
Does that work as well as surgery?
Now, that's where we get a little sticky here, because a lot of the technology is going well beyond what our studies have shown. So with minimally invasive ablative therapies, we only have intermediate data. We're talking about 3-4 years of following these patients and to see what our treatment rates are. But if early on and at intermediate data looks very good, if you look at our protocol that we have, we're looking at about we actually have 100% treatment rate where we have no enhancement post treatment. Which what we call is cure.
Harriet, what are some of the issues? We talk about local control for the cancer itself, but But I know that as a medical oncologist, your specialty is on the entire body. What are some of the concerns and risks for people that have had a cancer in the kidney?
So when a person first comes in, we do what we call staging. We try to see the extent of the tumor. And if it's localized to the kidney and potentially one lymph node, we'll resect it all out. And sometimes even if it's gone beyond that, if it's metastasized a little bit, we'll still do surgery. And at that point, you have two groups of patients. After surgery, you have patients who have no evidence of disease by any kind of CAT scan, and then you have patients who have measurable disease, and they're treated very differently. The patients who have no evidence of disease, a certain percentage of them will have a recurrence, and that percentage depends on how much disease they had in the first place and how aggressive their disease was. So in an individual patient, though, we can never say with 100% certainty whether the tumor is going to come back or not at any point. And right now we have a whole batch of different clinical trials that we're giving for these patients to see if we can decrease the likelihood of tumor coming back. The other group of patients are the patients that have measurable disease, whether they had the kidney out or not, and those are treated very differently. In that, if there is residual disease that's not resectable, we have to then treat them with something that's either IV or pill form, so it can go to all different parts of the body. And that actually is now also a very, very exciting arena. We started off in the 1990s getting our first drug approved by the FDA for kidney cancer. It's called high-dose interleukin-2. There's about a 20% response rate for kidney cancer, and some of those responses really end up being cures. So some of the patients that were treated in the 1980s have never had a recurrence. However, from 1995 onwards, we really had nothing else to offer the other 80% of patients. And chemotherapy doesn't really work for kidney cancer, standard old-fashioned chemotherapy. But right now we're actually on the verge of, or we've already started a total revolution in the way we treat kidney cancer, because over the last 3 years, three drugs have been approved by the FDA for kidney cancer, three additional drugs, and another one is about to be approved. And this has really, really changed the way we approach this disease.
Let me ask you a couple questions about immunology. People say that kidney cancer is different than other types of cancer, that it has some unusual, you know, qualities about it. I mean, what are they? What makes it unique?
Well, it's a very strange tumor that it's not radio sensitive. It's not chemo sensitive until these specific inhibitors came out. But what we did see in this tumor group was that some of these patients had regression, and your body actually could fight it and get rid of the tumor, and that's where the big push was for these immunotherapies like interleukin-2. Now, my training was at the National Cancer Institute, and a lot of that was the immunotherapy group, and that's why other things such as bone marrow transplants and these sort of things have always become at least exciting potential therapies before these type of new drugs that Harriet talked about, these tyrosine kinase inhibitors, were brought to light. But in addition, she mentioned that this is a very strange tumor. We actually have a surgical role in metastatic disease. We do take the primary tumor out, and that's not common in most cancers because it hasn't really been shown to affect the course of the cancer and other diseases, but we have randomized trials that show that it benefits, at least in immunotherapy. So we do take out the primary lesion here.
All right, we're going to get back to that in a minute because that is unique and very, very interesting. We'd like to remind you that you can email questions to our experts at canceranswers@yale.edu. And now we're going to take a short break for a medical minute, and then please stay tuned to learn more information about kidney cancer with Dr. Harriet Kluger and Dr. Ed Uccio.
Breast cancer is the second most common cancer in women. About 3,000 women in Connecticut will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year. But earlier detection, non-invasive treatments, and new therapies are providing more options for breast cancer patients, and more women are able to live with breast cancer than ever before. Beginning at age 40, every woman should schedule an annual mammogram, and you should start even sooner if you have a risk factor associated with breast cancer. Screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle are the most important factors in defeating breast cancer. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as the Yale Cancer Center, to make new treatments not yet approved by the Food and Drug Administration available to patients. This has been a Medical Minute, and you'll find more information at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and today I'm joined by Dr. Harry Kluger and Dr. Ed Ochio, and we're talking about the treatment options for people with kidney cancer. Ed, let's go back to that. So if someone has cancer of the kidney and it has spread elsewhere, and you take out their kidney, what might happen?
Well, it's actually not just taking it out. They have to get secondary therapy. So if they're not a candidate for secondary therapy, we do not take the primary lesion out. And we do what we call treatment with KIP, which kidney in place. So you have if you can have like significant metastatic disease and the primary lesion is not that significant, the oncologist would treat initially with with these new inhibitors or immunotherapy, and if they do respond, we can come back later. But remember, all the randomized trials was, you know, if they're not going to get to therapy, we do not take the kidney out, because taking out the kidney itself does not do anything. It's only with adjuvant therapy.
And we also think that there's something special and unique about the kidney tumor itself, in addition to the immune therapy that Ed just mentioned. The kidney tumors are much more vascular. They've got many, many more blood vessels. So one possibility is that by removing the primary tumor, we're removing the source of all of the growth factors, all of the stimulants for the growth of blood vessels in other places in the body, and that might itself help with the therapies that we're subsequently giving. And it might also have an immune role as well, but when we remove the primary tumor, because maybe that's really what's inhibiting the immune system to attack the other sites of the tumors in the other sites in the body. So we're not really sure what removing the kidney actually does, but it certainly statistically definitely appears to help. And so most of the new therapies that we have now actually, Ed mentioned, we call them TKIs or tyrosine kinase inhibitors. It's a very technical term, but essentially these are very small little molecules that hit specific proteins in the tumor or in the vessels and stop the growth of the tumor. Some of them are pill form, some of them are intravenous. As I said, three have been FDA approved in the last couple of years. And what we're seeing with our kidney patients is that we can never really predict who's going to respond to which one, and we're working on trying to do that. But at this point, we don't really know. And I think that sort of down the road, just a few years down the road, we're going to be facing a situation which is very similar to what we do in breast cancer. So just using that as an example, breast cancer, once it metastasizes, there are many people who have a very good quality of life for many years. We can't cure them, but we treat it like a chronic disease. So just like we can't cure diabetes, but people take their insulin all the time and they live their lives. And the same as in breast cancer, where you give one therapy, it may last for a few months, it may last for a couple of years, and then it stops working, then we move on to the next one, and we have basically a whole menu of therapies that we can choose from. And we're heading that way in kidney cancer as well. We think we're going to soon have a whole menu of drugs. They're not going to help everybody, but they seem to be helping a fair percentage of patients. And going forward, we're going to have additional things to choose from and hopefully options for patients that don't respond to either immune therapies or therapies that really work on the blood vessel system.
This is a very exciting field, actually, because Harriet knows that, you know, we study this in the laboratory. In our laboratory specifically, we study the von Hippel-Lindau gene. You're talking about a tumor that has a hereditary group that all of these patients form these tumors, and when we look back at those tumors, we find a defect at this von Hippel-Lindau protein. And now if you look at people who just come off the street that don't have any genetic predisposition to this, the majority also have a defect in this von Hippel-Lindau protein. So this von Hippel-Lindau protein is very active in this tumor angiogenesis, this blood vessel issue, and that's why these TK inhibitors that Harriet was talking about are, you know, so effective. Now, they are effective with the tumor, but they don't cure. And that's what she said. And that's why we concentrate on picking it up early, because with surgery we do cure. And I did mention adjuvant treatment, and I probably shouldn't have discussed it in that fashion, because there really is no adjuvant treatment right now. We're doing clinical trials regarding adjuvant treatment after surgery with these high-risk tumors that are very large, anything greater than T2, actually T1B now, that are large and high-grade that have a propensity to come back. We're trying in clinical trials trying to give these medicines to see if we can decrease that recurrence rate.
In general, there's the issue of angiogenesis or the creation of new blood vessels, and it sounds like you've got some agents that work on that. But you just mentioned this gene for von Hippel-Lindau syndrome. Do you have something that sort of turns off that gene for that group of patients, or is that where the science is headed, perhaps?
Well, actually, in the patients that have the mutation, it's off.
Yeah.
It's a tumor suppressor gene.
But it has some downward pathways that actually turn on because of that, such as hypoxia-inducible factor 1 and 2. So, you know, there are a lot of targets for us, and especially in our laboratory, looking at inhibiting these pathways for potential treatment modalities in the future.
Another question for both of you. How about vaccines? Is there a role for those?
Vaccines have been studied heavily for kidney cancer. Vaccines per se so far haven't worked. But on the immune therapy realm that we were talking about earlier, interleukin-2 is one. It's a vaccine-like therapy in that it boosts the immune system, but it's not a vaccine in my mind. Is when you give dead cells or weakened cells into a patient and you activate the immune system. So we're doing other kinds of immune stimulants. There's another drug called ipilimumab that we've given to melanoma patients fairly extensively. And it's being studied as well for kidney cancer, and the early studies are showing that there's activity. And there are a fair number of these immune stimulant drugs that are going to be coming down the pipeline, and we'll be trying them in kidney cancer as well.
Yeah. So let me ask you, in terms of your own research, what are some of the things you're working on and that you're excited about?
Yeah, I think that we're finding new pathways, and actually the not just the von Hippel-Lindau gene, tumor suppressor gene, being faulty, but what it affects in the pathways, what downstream pathways and potential targets. Because you look at all these therapies, they do have side effects, and we're trying to be very specific in our treatment, not just like standard chemotherapy, which does affect a lot of different cells that are rapidly dividing. We're actually hitting and inhibiting specific pathways. And that's, if you look at most of the research right now, that's what we're looking at, trying to find also new ways of diagnosing it by looking at tumor tissue arrays and genes and things that are upregulated in this cancer. I think immunotherapy still is a hot field, because if you look at the interleukin-2, although the response rate is not as exciting as the new TK inhibitors, you're talking about, these are durable responses. So there's 10% that are actually cured, and we don't get that with the TK inhibitor. So I don't think that is necessarily a treatment that's gone to the wayside. It has a lot of side effects and things, but it's still an option.
Actually, on the contrary, when we have a young, robust, healthy person who can handle the interleukin-2, that's our treatment of choice. And only if it doesn't work in that patient do we go to the anti-angiogenic approach, specifically for the reasons that Ed just mentioned, that we can actually cure, it's a small percentage, but we can actually cure them with the interleukin-2, so we try that first.
Yeah, that's why I send them to Harriet and the Yale group, because not everyone is actually that aggressive, and I think that, you know, what we're really shooting for is long-term cure here.
Well, what are some of the clinical trials that are available for people with kidney cancer at Yale and elsewhere?
Well, we have a trial with two drugs called 5-azacitidine and interferon. We're giving it for melanoma and kidney cancer, and we've seen a couple of responses with that. We have a number of very novel therapies. I can give the names of them. An HSP90 inhibitor and so on. But these are all additional new small molecules that we're trying for patients to see if we can increase that repertoire of approaches.
And Ed, let me ask you sort of the same thing in terms of surgical approaches and any new technologies that you're working on or that are on the horizon that may make a difference for our patients.
Yeah, if you're talking about surgical and minimally invasive technology, there's new technologies such as HIFU, which is high intensity focused ultrasound, which instead of putting the needle in, we can just like an ultrasound, put on the side of the body and focus energy straight at the tumor. So there wouldn't actually be no incisions, no no actually piercing of the skin at all. Now, that's not FDA approved in the U.S., but is only in clinical trials. So there's things on the horizon, and there's some other things that, you know, I've been approached by various biological companies trying to develop even more minimally invasive treatments. So, yeah, there's a lot out there, especially for the surgeon and even the interventionalist who's trying to treat these in a minimally invasive fashion. And, you know, we have clinical trials also looking at adjuvant treatments like we discussed, and we work closely with the National Cancer Institute, and they have a significant amount of trials looking at kidney cancer and also treatment in these hereditary von Hippel-Lindau or these other hereditary cancers such as hereditary papillary renal cell carcinoma. And as we find that there are a significant amount of genes involved here, and they actually form different types of kidney cancer.
This is not, it's not uncommon. It's also certainly not the most, an incredibly common type of cancer. When a patient is seen at a center like Yale, for example, tell us a little bit about the idea of multidisciplinary care and what goes into that.
Usually the patient's seen first by the surgeon, although that's not always the case. Sometimes they come to us first. We will then image the patient, whether it's a CAT scan or an MRI, or depending on the patient and the specific situations, but we get pictures. We don't do biopsies first, as Ed originally said. And then we present the patient at our tumor board, and at the tumor board we have the pathologist, radiologist, surgeons, and medical oncologists all present, and we can discuss how to approach it. Sometimes it's better to give the systemic therapy, in other words, the intravenous or the pill first, and then try to take out a kidney. Sometimes we do it the other way around, and that's the real advantage of having the multidisciplinary clinic.
I think the future is multidisciplinary and working together here, because, you know, we definitely want to start to get these trials going. And we, early on, if I see a metastatic patient, we'll call the oncologist and make sure that they're aware. And we definitely always have tumor boards and presentations to make sure that we have different opinions and get a collaborative approach to these to the treatment of these patients.
Is the prognosis? I mean, unfortunately, it's still obviously a very serious disease, and one where we don't have a cure for many patients. But is the prognosis improving overall for patients with this diagnosis?
Overall, it is, but we're also finding them smaller, and we're finding less aggressive tumors. So we don't know if that's a real improvement in the prognosis. It sometimes takes time until you actually see it with the new drugs starting to help and prolong life.
Yeah. So we've been taking out the kidney or the tumor for a very long time. So we actually know what our cure rates are, especially when it's very small and still confined to the kidney. The real key now is to do it with less invasion to the body. And we're trying to do this with, again, you know, focused ultrasound, cryotherapy, and just so then at some point maybe the drug will be so good that we don't have to do any surgery at all and I'll go out of business. But
from your mouth to God's ears.
Yeah, no, which would be terrific. I have to say it's been really interesting hearing about the advances both in terms of surgery and in terms of medical therapy, and really the collaboration between what the two of you do. I think it's great. So I want to thank both of you, Dr. Harry Kluger and Dr. Edward Uccio, for joining us on Yale Cancer Center Answers.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
And actually, on behalf of the Yale Cancer Center, I want to wish everyone listening a safe and healthy week.
If you have questions, comments, or would like to subscribe to our podcast, go to yalecancercenter.org, where you'll also find transcripts of past broadcasts in written form. Next week, we'll look at the field of psychiatric oncology with Dr. Jimmy Holland. I'm Bruce Barber, and you're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.